Okay, tonight's learning is dedicated to the Nishmas Rivka Bas Avraham. Tonight we have the privilege of learning together Parsha Shoftim. Parsha Shoftim is a jammed-packed Parsha, like many of the Parshas in Sefer Devarim, but like all the other Parshas that we've read, we're going to try to find relevancy and connection of Parsha Shoftim to the time where we find ourselves, meaning in Chodesh Elul, in preparation for the Yom Nerayim, anticipation of Yom Nerayim. We're going to try to find and see the correlations, the connections that are found in this week's Parsha to the time that we find studying these Parshas. Quick overview of Parsha Shoftim. So the beginning of the Parsha, the Torah discusses the idea of judges and enforcement of the law. The importance, the significance of what we call today law and order, how we have to have a judicial system that is enforced, and we'll talk more about that, and this is something that we can all relate to, not even from as a Torah Jew, but perhaps just as a regular person in a society. There has to be rules and regulations, but more than anything, there has to be enforcement of the rules and regulations, because a law on the book does not really help unless it's actually enforced, and the Torah prohibits the planting of an Asherah, which we'll talk a little bit more about. Then we have the idea of, Torah reminds us over here about people that are trying to cause us to sway us. They're trying to get us to serve Avodah Zarah, to get us to go off the Derech. Then we have the idea of what's known as the Beis Din HaGadol, that if we have a dispute, we have a question, we have disagreements, we bring it to the big, top, highest Beis Din HaGadol, the Beis Din of 71, that were in Lishkas HaGazis, and they will rule the matter. There's a famous pasuk in this week's parasha called Laisasor Min Adover Asher Yigidu L'Chayam Min Usmol, which is the source that Gemara tells us. We discussed it a little bit this past Sunday morning. In our Sunday morning share, it's the idea that we have a Torah obligation, a biblical obligation to listen to what the Rabbanim say. If this, again, we'll have to try to discuss a little bit more the details of what this means. It does mean if your shul rabbi tells you that, you know, you have to show up at the shul meeting and you don't show up, you're in a violation of Laisasor. Laisasor, the Gemara says, means if you don't listen to the Rabbanim. A person decides, I only keep Torah law, I don't keep the Rabbanim, similar to the Karayim, or other groups in Jewish history of people who only kept the Torah and not the Rabbanim, they're making a colossal mistake. There's a violation called Laisasor. Then the Torah discusses the idea of having a Jewish king, Sam Atasim Alach HaMelech, the idea, the relevancy of a Jewish king, and we'll talk a little bit about how it connects to our life, even though today we don't have a Jewish king, but how the lessons of the king is very much alive in our life. Then we have the various Matnas Kahuna, the various gifts and presents that were given to the Kohen because they were Shevet Levi, because the Kehanim had no, the Shevet Levi had no independence, had no independency of their own. They had no independency of their own. They did not have any jobs. They were completely supported by the community. And because they were completely, supported by the community, they got certain and different matnas kahuna, matnas, you know, what we'd call today, not kickbacks, but they would get gifts because, again, they didn't have a typical regular job to provide for themselves. Then the Torah gives us, again, some other details about false people trying to cause you to sway, which is a big theme in these parashiyas of always, of those around us always trying to cause us to sway. Because you have to remember, till now the Jewish people lived in a cocoon. We lived in a little bubble. We lived in a bubble known as the Midbar. And in the Midbar, we had the Anania cover protecting us. No one could touch us. No one can get us. And all of a sudden now we're being warned and we're being taught that we're going to be going into the very scary world out there. And in the very scary world out there, there will be people that are going to try to cause us to go away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think that there's a strong relevancy. I work with, I have a yeshiva for boys who go to college in the afternoon. Most of them go to secular college, go to Queens College. In the morning we learn. And I often point out to a lot of people, the transition from the yeshiva life to the secular world is very difficult. You know, a person's in yeshiva, he's cocooned, he's protected, he's not really exposed to what the outside world has to offer. And when you do get exposed, it sometimes hits you over the head and you don't know what to do with it. This is a big problem in our world. A lot of wonderful yeshiva boys were in the yeshiva system for many, many years, and then they go into the working world and they don't know how to transition it properly. There's a transition of how to do this, because the Torah is reminding us here also. In the Midbar, we were very spoiled. We were not exposed to outside influences. We were all the same, and we were all benefiting from each other. All of a sudden now, we have to go, we're going to move into Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to learn, and we're going to see, and we're going to be exposed to people that are not like us. And it's not an easy thing how to deal with people that are not like you. Then the Torah repeats again over here, a parasha we had a little bit earlier of the Ir Miklat, person kills accidentally, he has to run to a city of refuge, and he has to stay there as Mois Kohen HaGadol. He stays there until the Kohen Gadol dies, but the Torah reminds us you only get to go there if you actually kill accidentally, not if you kill on purpose. This week's parasha, we have the idea of judges, of witnesses, the significance of two witnesses, the importance of two witnesses, and the parasha of Edim Zoymim, if people try to testify falsely. Then the end of the parasha, the Torah talks about what you need to know before you go to war. Before a person goes to war, they have a special type of pep talk. They have a special role, the Kohen Meshuach Milchoma. His entire job, his entire role was to be the prep talk, to be the inspiration or perhaps the fear before the Jewish people would go to war. And he'd give them a whole speech of what they need to know before they go to war. Then at the end of the parasha, the Torah concludes with the story of Egla Rufa. Again, we have the parasha of Bal Tashchis in this week's parasha. You're not allowed to chop down trees and destroy things. Then the Torah concludes with the story of the Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa is when a body is found and no one knows the reason for the death. There's no witnesses, there's no evidence, there's no DNA, there's no nothing. So we take the Zikni Ha'ir and they have to make this very, very famous statement of Yodenu Lo Shofchu Es Adom, we were not involved. It's not us. We are not the reasons for anything that's happening, and then they're exempt from what happened. That's a basic overview. Again, very brief. I skipped a couple of things here and there, but that's a basic overview of what to expect in this week's parasha and parasha Shoftim. Okay, now let's get back to the beginning of the parasha and let's tackle the pasuk. Opening pasuk: Shoftim v'shoytrim titen l'cha b'chol shayrech. Again, we could probably spend an entire shiur on the first pasuk. I think in other years we've spent a lot of time in the first couple of pasukim. This year, I hope to move on from that. But let's start a little bit the first pasuk: Shoftim v'shoytrim. What are shoftim and what are shoytrim? So Rashi learns the shofet is the one who makes the laws and the shoytrim are the ones who enforce the laws. We have today in America, we have the different judicial branches, those who make the laws and then those who enforce the laws. You have the Supreme Court who makes decisions and then you have the police who go out and actually enforce the laws. The police are not making up the laws. They're probably not well-versed in constitutional law. And the Supreme Court are not enforcing the laws. So there's different roles of those people that are the shoftim, those people that are enforcing the laws, that are making the laws, and the shoftim are the ones that are enforcing the laws. And this Taka Medrash, the Medrash Taka writes that if you don't have both of these two systems, it's not going to work. You can make all the rules you want and write up all these laws, and no one's going to keep them. It doesn't get you anywhere. So you have to have someone who knows how to enforce the law, and you also have to have someone who knows how to make the laws, both very essential parts of a judicial system. Many mefarshim are bothered with the change in the singular. Shoftim v'shoytrim means the police officers and the Supreme Courts. Titein l'cha, you should place b'chol sha'arecha in all of your gateways. Hashem has given to you. What's the singular? What do you mean singular? I'm not making a shayfit. It's a shayfit and a shayfit are communal responsibility. So there's a classical pshat that's found by many. The Chida writes it as well, that the shayfit and a shayfit l'cha is talking to each one of us. We each have to be our own shayfit and we each have to be our own shayter. We have to be our own judges and we have to be our own policemen. And we have to protect all our sharech. What are our open, what does it mean, our gateways, our doorways? So the Chida explains we all have different cavities. We have our eyes, we have our ears, we have our mouth. Those are all openings. So we have to patrol ourselves to make sure we don't say what we shouldn't say, we shouldn't see what we shouldn't see, and we shouldn't hear what we shouldn't see, what we're not supposed to hear. So we have to be on top of ourselves, writes the Chida. And this is a classical pshat found in many, many Mefarshim throughout the last 200-300 years. The Mefarshim, Achumash, all work with the same idea. The Bali Musar work with this. That you have to be your own shayf and you have to be your own shayter. You have to make rules and you have to enforce the rules on yourself. Get to a certain age where you no longer can force people to do things. No one can force you anymore. You're a big boy. And you get to a point where you have to do things on your own. I was just telling the Talmidim in Yeshiva today that we came across a fascinating tshuva in the Reb Zilberstein Sefer. He discusses a shayla about a Rav who wants to force his Baal Batim to learn more, so he wants to schedule a shir, and he wants to make it at a time where they basically have no choice that they have to go to the shir. Like if you schedule a shir, right after davening, so everyone's already stuck there, so you kind of hold them hostage. So I told the Talmidim, I said, well, it's not important what the raya that Reb Zilberstein brought was, but I'm telling you now, it's a bad idea. Forcing people to learn and forcing adults to learn is not going to work. They're adults, they're self-sufficient people. If they want to learn, they learn. If they don't want to learn, they're not going to learn. We all have to be adults at some point, and we have to decide what we're going to do. No one can force us anymore. When you're in school, so the Mora forces you, the Rebbe forces you, your parents force you, your wife forces you, maybe a little bit. But at some point in life, we have to take it on ourselves. We have to be achrei for ourselves. So therefore, writes the Chida, you have to be your own shefet, and you have to be your own shaiter, and you have to be able to enforce the rules on yourself. You have to be enforcing yourself. The Sfasemes says it a little differently. The Sfasemes says that shefet and shaitrim, shefet are the things that make sense. Right? We have certain laws in the Torah that make sense to us. They're logical mitzvahs, what he calls mitzvah sechli. And shaiter implies to those mitzvahs that are not sechli. We have a whole list of mitzvahs that don't make too much sense, but we do them because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzvahs. So he writes, as Fasem says along the same lines, he says, shayfid v'shayt m'tid l'cha, you have to take both of them. And sometimes you have to force yourself to do the things that don't make sense. Sometimes we do mitzvahs that don't make sense. It doesn't make sense to us why I should do this or why I have to do that. But that's what Hashem said. So the Sfasem is along the same ideas. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein also works with this in his sefer. Again, it's really a lot of the same idea that sometimes we have to be mature enough and achroy enough to be our own judge and our own policeman, and we have to control ourselves, and we have to enforce them. That's obviously the correlation to Chodesh Elul. As we get ready to the Yom Teruah, we have to be our own policemen. We have to make sure that we're behaving, and we have to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do, and it has to come from us. It has to come l'cha. We can't expect other people to do it for us. Obviously, sometimes you get chizik from people, you get advice from people, but at the end of the day, we're going to be the ones that are going to decide if we do the right thing or if we do the wrong things. That's the idea of the opening pasuk, of the importance of shoyftim v'shoytrim. This is the importance and the significance of having honest and righteous business people. We have to make sure that everyone is doing the right thing. Then the Torah tells us, we're not allowed to veer off from an honest judging. Right? We're not allowed to take bribery. Right? One of the common things today in the world is bribery. Some countries it's more open, and some countries it's a little under the radar, but briberies in the political world is a mess. Everyone is accepting bribes. Some of them are more blatant, some of them are a little less blatant, but we know that the world goes around with bribery. You give people money under the table, and hush money, and this money, it's against the Torah. The Torah says we have to be honest. We're not allowed to take bribery. Why, says the Torah? The Torah gives us a reason, which is unique. The Achrayim are bothered. Usually the Torah doesn't tell us why we do things. Here the Torah gives us a reason. Why? The Torah felt comfortable giving us a reason. Why? So the Sholem Eishiv writes, usually the Torah doesn't want to give us a reason, because if the Torah gives us a reason, we start to come up with cheshbonos, how the reason doesn't apply to us. Right, that's why we start to say, no, it doesn't apply to me. I'm in a different category. Says the Sholem Eishiv, but over here, everyone knows. No one's above Sheikhat. It's a mitzias. It's a fact. Sheikhat, everyone is affected by Sheikhat. No one is above Sheikhat. The Torah can say that with confidence and certainty. Everyone is going to be affected by Sheikhat. No one is above, is beyond Sheikhat. The Bach has a very nice pshat that the word Sheikhat means bribery. So he says it comes from the term shehu chad, your individual. Why? He says because Chazal tell us, it's even brought down l'halacha, that anyone who judges an honest judging is a shutuf with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria Sa'ilam, which is an amazing statement. Every single time a person follows Choshe Mishpat and he does mominus the way Hashem wants it to go, and he judges honestly, and he doesn't cheat anyone, and he pays his bills like he's supposed to, and he doesn't try to get out of things. So the Gemara says he's a shutuf, he's a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the entire creation of the world. And we always assume that God made the world without us. He doesn't need our help. He doesn't need our involvement. But the Gemara says that if we do things honestly in business, we make honest judgments, we become a shutif. So writes the Bach, when a person takes shaychad, so he's now chadhu. He now becomes independent. He loses his partnership with HaKadosh Baruch because he's not a partner anymore with Hashem, because Hashem doesn't need partners who are corrupt. So therefore, that's the Lashon. Shaychad comes to the Lashon shehu chad. You're an individual now. You're no longer a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, who would want to give up a partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And therefore, Shaychad is a terrible thing. I think in other years we spoke about, Rav Pam brings out this message that the Gemara in Tzubis talks about different examples of Amoraim who had to recuse themselves. I still can never pronounce that word. They had to remove themselves off the court in cases because people did very, very small things for them. The Gemara tells a story. One Amoraim, someone blew some dust off his shirt and he had to take himself off the case. Another Amoraim, someone gave him his hand to help him cross a bridge. He took himself off the case. So Rav Pam points out, you think that these Amoraim are so easily bought off. He said, Fakert. they have such a sense of akaris hatov. When someone does them even the smallest of favor, they feel so indebted. They feel so so makir toy that they had to take themselves off the case. It's not the pshat that they're so easily bought. Most of us would say, "Big deal. He didn't do anything for me, so he gave me his hand to cross the bridge. Big deal." These amaroyim had such a sense of akaris hatov that even the smallest favor to them was the biggest favor. And that's why a person has to be so careful. He has to take himself off the case. That's how the Chafetz Chaim explains. That's why when the Benoy Slavchot came to Moshe Rabbeinu, I think we pointed this out when we learned it, that when Benoy Slavchot came to Moshe Rabbeinu, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, "I don't know, I have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu." Why did Moshe Rabbeinu know the answer? So the Chafetz Chaim says, I think it's really a medrash. But the Chafetz Chaim says, because they said that our father was not Ba'adas Kerach. So right away, you said your father's not Ba'adas Kerach. That means your father was on my side. So Moshe Rabbeinu was already Shtikol Sheichad. It means you're on my side and you were on my team. You weren't you weren't the opponent. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I can't judge the case anymore. I already hear too much. I'm already a baldover because your father was not against me. He was on my side. He already had to pass himself from being Sheichad. Sheichad is very tricky. It's a big nesayin. They say over from, I think, Reb Shach. Reb Shach said that people forget that Sheichad comes in not only in financial terms. He said Sheichad sometimes comes in tears also. So sometimes you're stuck, you have to be a judge in a court case, a mom in this case, and one of the parties is bawling, is crying. He says you can't get sheichad by the tears either. Avada, we're all human, and humans get affected by tears. But he said you have to be careful, you can't get sheichad, I don't know if that's a word or not, but you can't get taken by tears, you have to be able to do what's right. Obviously, a human being is affected by tears. Reb Shach says about himself once. They say a ma'isa that a girl came to Reb Shach and asked Reb Shach if he'll be misadar at her chasana. And Reb Shach apologized. He said, "I'm sorry, I can't. I need the time to prepare for my shir. I can't be misadar." And the girl started crying. And Reb Shach said, okay, I'll be misadar at the chasana." They asked Reb Shach, "Why did you change your mind?" So Reb Shach said, I can't watch the tears of Abbas Yisrael. The tears of Abbas Yisrael just changed my mind so fast. So that's obviously an importance of Stamazay, the Kayach HaTears. we spoke about it on Tisha B'Av from the Satmar Rebbe. Satmar Rebbe pointed out in the Kinnah that we read on Tisha B'Av, we discuss, again, there's different versions. There's the Kinnah that we read and the way the Medrash says it over. But the way we have the Kinnah is that when they try to use all the Avos and the Imois to speak on Klal Yisrael's behalf, to prevent the Churban, so the way we have it in the Kinnah at least, is that the Imois were the ones who were able to calm HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Satmar Rebbe said it's because they cried. The tears of a Jewish mother have unbelievable powers. We often don't think enough about it, that the tears of a Jewish mother, you know, Jewish mothers need to cry for their children, they need to cry for their grandchildren, they need to cry for them and for their spouses, the unbelievable kayach of the bechiyah of a Jewish mother. They say over a cute story with the Bach and the Taz. The Bach was the father-in-law of the Taz. The Bach was wealthy and the Taz wasn't so wealthy. His son-in-law wasn't such a wealthy fellow. And one Shabbos, the Taz was spending Shabbos with his father-in-law, the Bach. So he used to have a practice. He would come to his Shver for Shabbos. He used to deposit with his Shver any of his valuables that he took with him in some form of, I guess, a safety box to make sure in the safe that nothing happened to the valuables. So this one Shabbos that he came to the Taz was spending by his Shver, the Bach was very cold, very, not friendly to his son-in-law. So after Shabbos, he goes over to the Shver, he says, why were you so cold to me over Shabbos? Usually we have a good relationship. Besides the places where the Taz and the Bach argue in Halacha, this meant, we have a good relationship, so why were you so cold to me? So the Bach told the Taz, he said, because this Shabbos when you came, so on Friday you gave me all your valuables, and I noticed you have tons and tons of extra money. And he said, I know you're a dayin, I know you're a rabbi, I know you don't make a lot of money. So I know that this must be sheichad money. So I was so upset at you that I assumed you took sheichad money. So the Taz tells the Bach, no, it's not sheichad money. He said, I saved up all this money, I have to go for a certain procedure, and that's why I have all this money with me. But avad chas v'shalom, it was not any sheichad money. Okay, so you see that even the Bach maybe thought that the Taz was, whatever you want to make from that story. In father and son-in-law relationships, maybe, in any case. But Sheichad is a real sticky, sticky situation. And Sheichad is Ya'aber in Eichachamim, even very, very smart people, even very intelligent people can easily be swayed when it comes to Sheichad. So if the Torah reminds us that Tzedek Tzedek Tirdef, the pursuit of of righteousness. We have to live a life of righteousness. We always have to make sure we're doing what's right and what's proper. Okay, that's the beginning of the parasha. Again, that's obviously an important lesson. We have to know that we have to have rules and regulations, and we have to make sure that we're keeping them. Then the Torah has a prohibition called Loisita Lucha Asherah Kaleitz. You're not allowed to plant an Asherah. So most of us assume that the prohibition of an Asherah means a tree that we worship for Avodah Zarah. That is true, but there's another din over here that you're not allowed to plant trees. The Rambam records it that you're not allowed to, it's based on the, you're not allowed to record trees. You're not allowed to plant trees in and around the Harabayis and near the Beis Hamikdash. Why not? So the Rambam writes, because even though you're doing it lenoi, you're doing it because you want to make it look beautiful, you want to make the Harabayis look nice, you want the Beis Hamikdash to look nice, it's awesome. Why? Because he says that's what they do to Avodah Zarah. And we're prohibited from doing anything that the Goyim do for the Avodah Zarah, which again is an underlining theme in this week's parish, which I hope to develop a little bit more later, is that so often we like to do things and we say, I borrowed it from the Goyim, but it's okay. I borrowed it from the Goyim, I learned it from the Goyim, I saw it by the Goyim, but it's okay. The Torah sometimes tells us it's not okay. Because not everything that the Goyim do is all we are allowed to do. Obviously, there are some things that the Goyim do that we do also, and that's okay, and it's mutter. But a lot of things, and this is really the early years of Reform Jewry, where they wanted to borrow a lot of things from the church. This is why a lot of the dinim from the Chassam Sofer and the Talmud of the Maram Shik, they were very, very makbid on certain menhagim, because they were holding to make sure that the menhagim didn't change as Reform took hold in Hungary. They were trying to bring a lot of practices from the church and bring them into the shul. And they started off with from a cheshbonus. We're going to take it and put it into the shul. We're going to borrow it from the goyim and put it for us. And here we see, and we'll see it in another place in the parasha as well, that the Torah often reminds us that we shouldn't borrow what the goyim have to offer, and therefore we shouldn't take what they have to offer. Again, you have to know when you could take things from the goyim and perhaps use them. But here the Torah is saying, no, you're not allowed to use that. This is something you have to stay very clear of. We're not allowed to. We're not allowed to do so. They say over a story that in they say over in Brisk, in the town of Brisk, until Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was the rabbi, they were not allowed to have any trees in the courtyard of the shul, because they held that the same way the Beis Hamikdash is not allowed to have any trees, so the shul was also not allowed to have any trees in the area. Until Reb Chaim Soloveitchik became the rabbi, and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said that he has a tradition from the Netziv. That was his wife's grandfather, that the Netziv said it's okay, we don't make the comparison to the Beis HaMikdash, to the shul. And that's why after Reb Chaim's times, they were allowed to have wood and trees growing in the shul in Brisk. Okay? Then we talked, I think, about this in other years, I don't want to get into it now, the idea of the Matseva. The Torah prohibits us to have a Matseva. And the Torah uses very strong words, Asher Sonei Hashem Elokecha, it's despised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the question is, what do you mean, are always built matzevas? Why all of a sudden now is a matzeva no good? So we spoke about that in previous years, the idea of the matzeva, why is the matzeva now no longer acceptable? Then we have over here, where the Torah tells us that you're going to matzah b'kibucha b'echad sherecha, you're going to find one of your Jewish friends, Asher Hashem Elokecha na'islach isha yisha asher yaseh Rabbi Hashem Elokecha, you're going to find someone who does something bad. He's going to go do Avodah Zarah. So what do you do with him, says the Pasuk? Very important Pasuk. Perek Yizayin, Pasuk Dalet. V'hugad lecha, it will be told to you, v'shamata, and you will hear it. V'derash tehetev, and you'll search it. V'hinei emes nachan adav, it's taka true. So the Torah says, what do you do with him? So the Torah gives him a punishment. So the Platzker Goyin, Rav Ayyaleib Tzins. Ayyaleib Tzins was a contemporary of the Vilna Goyin. Lived at the end of the 1700s, a big Goin, Platzker Goin. So he says a Gevaldik Yisai, which is even more true today. He says, what's Pshat in the Pasuk? It says in the Pasuk that you'll find about that a fellow Jew goes to worship Avodah Zarah. V'hugad lecha, it will be notified to you. V'shamat, and you will hear it. V'derash tehetev, and you'll look into it. What's the v'shamata? Says the Platzker Goin so many times, we hear things, we say to ourselves, I don't want to hear it. Can it zayin? It can't be in our community. It doesn't exist in our world. And you completely disregard it. Said the Platzker Goyin, it's a mistake. V'shamata, listen to it. Then, v'derashta, look into it to see if it's true. For many, many years, many problems in the Frum community were totally ignored. People used to say, no, we don't have abuse in our community, and we don't have drugs in our community, and we don't have this domestic spousal abuse. No, we don't, none of that exists in our community. That was a big mistake. And Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael has woken up. I think to realize that all the problems that the outside world has to offer, sadly finds its entire community also. We have drug abuse, and we have alcohol abuse, and we have a lot of problems. But this Platzke Goyen's word is so beautiful on the pasuk. Vishamata, listen. Don't just brush it under the rug and say, it can't be, it can't sign, not in our community, I don't want to hear it. You got to take it, you got to listen to it. We mention this every year, I like to bring it up. It's the same idea by Tzim Gedalia. If you go through the Gemara, when the Gemara explains what happened with Gedalia ben Achikam, Gedalia ben Achikam was notified by one of his people that someone wanted to kill him, that Yishmael wanted to kill him. But he said, not Kenneth Zion, I don't want to believe it. No, can't be. The way the Marshal learns, that was a tain on him. It's really the way the Gemara says it. What do you mean you can't be? You got to do your research. If something sounds like it's a problem, you got to research it. I'm not saying you have to lock up everyone just based on hearsay and just based on, you know, rumors, but you got to at least listen. The shamata, you got to listen to an accusation. Now we live in the Me Too movement, so it's a little bit more popular, but the Torah is reminding us that if you hear someone doing something bad, don't just completely disregard it and say, can't be, it's not true, it doesn't exist. Mishamata, a person should listen to it and process it properly. Then the Torah says, so what do you do with this guy? So you got to get rid of him. You got to take him out and kill him. How do you do that? You got to use witnesses. You have either two witnesses or three witnesses. So the obvious kash is, if you know two witnesses, good. So why does the Torah have to say three witnesses? So the Gemara makes a drasha. Different rules of why it's important for us to know two or three. Good. Then it says, lo yumas al pi'erechad, you may not kill based on one witness. Good. So we know the idea, the importance of two witnesses, the role of witnesses that they play in Jewish law. Then the pasuk says something interesting. It says in the pasuk, you kill the dead person. Why is he called the dead person? So the Rechaim HaKadosh writes that really, he's already dead. The guy did the Aveira, he's a dead man walking. But Bezin has to go through the notion, Bezin has to go through the process to find him guilty and then to have him killed. But he's already a Yumas. It's amazing, Diak. I never thought about it. Read the pasuk many times. Yumas HaMes, kill the dead. What do you mean, kill the dead? He's not dead yet. Dr. Chaim HaKadosh, he's already dead. This guy did an Aveira, he was Aveira by the Zara. He went off Yiddishkeit, he's already dead. He's already considered dead, even though Bezin just has to go through the process. But he's really considered a dead man walking. Then the Torah writes over here, Ki Palei Mimcha Davar LaMishpat, if you'll have something that is separated, something that you're fighting over, Bein Dom L'Dom, Bein Din L'Din, Bein Nega L'Nega, you'll have a Machloikis. So normally, the way it used to be, at least according to the Ramban, is that every Shevet had their own Bezdin. Every Shevet had their own Bezdin, and that worked fine until there was a disagreement, until there was a Ki Palei Mimcha, there was a disagreement. They didn't like what the Bezdin of their Shevet said, so they took it to a higher court, they took it to the Bezdin Hagog. But the Ramban learned that every Shevet had their own Bezdin, and that's okay, because it's okay to have your own judges, right? People have to realize that we live in a very, very diverse, Klal Yisrael is very diverse. We have Chassidim, and we have Ashkenazim, and Litvishes, and Sfaradim, and we have our own judicial system, right? There's Chassidish Dayanim, and there's Chassidish Rabbanim, and Chassidish Paiskim, and then there's Litvish Dayanim, and Litvish Paiskim, and Litvish Rabbanim, and a Chassidish guy shouldn't go to a Litvish guy, and again, we have our own people, and that's fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu values diversity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes us all to be different. That's why all the Shvatim were different, and that's why there's different 12 Sha'arim for the Tfilas to go through, like the Arizal talks about. We don't all have to be the same, but we all have to know where we are. A Litvish guy shouldn't be running to a Chassidish Adayin for every one of his Shailas. He has to know that he's part of the Litvish circle. He should follow the Litvish Ha'ro. And if you're a Svadish guy, you should follow. Again, doesn't mean you can't ask a Chassidish Adayin a Shaila, but you have to know that you have a certain background, that you have a certain Minhagim, and you have to keep within the Minhagim. So what does the Torah say? There'll be a disagreement. What are they fighting over? Bein dom l'din. Bein dom l'dom. There's a fight. There's a disagreement over blood. What does it mean, blood? So there's a machloek is whether the dam is tame or the dam is tar. What's the next one? Bein din l'din. There's a disagreement over whether or not one guy is innocent and one guy is chayiv. Or bein nega l'nega, a disagreement over a nega tame or a nega tar. So the Skolana Rebbe has the following kasha. Great observation. It says there's dom l'dom, din l'din, nega l'nega. So Rashi says, what's dom le dom? Dom tome, dom tar. So what do we put first? The dam tome goes first and the dam tar goes second. What's the next thing? Din le din. What's din le din? So Rashi says, between a zakai and a chayef. So what does Rashi put first? The zakai and then the chayiv. So, and then when it comes to nega lenega, Rashi says nega tomei negato. Frank the Skolana Rebbe, why when it came to the dumb and the nega, we put tomei first, but when it came to din, we put zakai first. Said the Skolana Rebbe, beautiful yisait. If it's a shayla in a halachic shayla, you go lechumra. You be machmir until you find otherwise. So you go dom tome, you go nega tome. But he says when you're disagreeing with a person, you're arguing who's chayiv money, then the person is assumed to be zakai until he's assumed to be chayiv. Then zakai goes first. Then we assume you're innocent until proven guilty. Then there's no in you of being machmir to call yenem guilty until I know. If I want to be machmir on something, so on the object I'll be machmir on. But if it's a shayla of a person, I want to say that he's guilty. No, he's innocent until proven guilty. It says, so explains the Skolana Rebbe. Such a beautiful, beautiful idea. Right? We know that's true in American law. You're innocent until proven guilty. That a person has to realize that the idea and the importance of assuming someone's innocent until he's found guilty. And there's a similar idea that the Mefarshim talk about at the beginning of the parasha. When we talked about Shoiftim v'Shoitrim Titan Lecha, one of the ideas that Mefarshim talk about is Shoiftim v'Shoitrim Titan Lecha means judge yourself before you judge others. So often we always think the flaws in someone else. He's the troublemaker. He's the bad one. No, maybe it's you. Maybe the flaw lies in you. The mistake is not in him. The mistake is inside. Titan Lecha means look inwards. If you're having a disagreement with someone, you're having an argument with someone, you can't get along with someone, so right away assume it's because he's the bad guy. Says the Mefarsh, I think they call from the Baal Shem Tov. Titan Lecha, look inside. Maybe you're the one who needs trouble, who has trouble. Maybe you're the one who needs to improve himself. That's what they say over a story. They say there was a fellow that was having some Shalom Bayis problems with his wife. His wife wouldn't listen to him. She would never listen to what he had to say. So he decided he was going to buy her a present. He was going to buy her hearing aids. Because he assumes she just doesn't hear well, so she was going to buy him hearing aids. So he goes to the pharmacy to buy a hearing aid, and the guy asks him, well, what level of deficiency does your wife have in hearing? So he says, I have no idea. How am I supposed to know? He says, go home and see how far away you can talk to her, and she will hear you. So the guy comes home, he screams from the first floor of the house, he screams to his wife, honey, I'm home, what's for supper? He gets no response. He goes closer, he goes to the next floor, he says, screams again, nothing. Then he goes right outside the door and he screams, nothing. And then he goes into the room and he screams again and his wife ignores him. He says to his wife, I don't understand. You don't hear anything I say. So the wife says back to him, I answered you 4 times already. And the husband realized it wasn't she that had the hearing problem. It was he who had the hearing problem. He was the one that was deficient, not her. So many times in life, we always think it's Yenem who's the problem. Sometimes we need to look inward and see, no, it's us. So that's similar to what the Skolana Rebbe is saying over here. We're so quick to passel someone. No, we don't passel you. He's Zakai. First, he's Zakai. He's assumed to be Zakai until proven to be Chayiv. We have over here a Medrash, a very, very important Medrash. I think I mentioned this Medrash some years on Tisha B'Av. The Medrash says that the Klal Yisrael came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a taina. We know there are many different rules and regulations when it comes to halacha. And the Bnei Yisrael taina to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you didn't keep halacha during the Chorban. Why? Because it says by the blood, it says, referring to Klal Yisrael, that you're not allowed to kill. We have, let's say, for example, we have a din called Oisei Vez Benoi. You're not allowed to shech the child and its mother on the same day. So they came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, yeah, what happened during the Churban? When hundreds and thousands of Jews were murdered, it was all on the same day. You didn't keep Oisei Vez Benoi. That was one taina they had. Then they had another taina. You didn't keep the din of Nega. What does Nega mean? That they were supposed to have that... you're not allowed to be metamed the base abayis. You have to have the kedushas abayis. So why was there no kedushas abayis in the base of Migdosh when you allowed the Romans to do what they wanted? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered back that there was no achdus. Since there was no achdus in Klal Yisrael, I wasn't bound by those rules, and therefore I was allowed to kill and I was allowed to murder, and all rules were off. So they say over a pshat like this. That's pshat in the next pasuk. Ki yipalei mimcha davar la mishpat. If you're wondering, how How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow the Chorban to happen? And how do you allow mother and child to be killed on the same day? And how do you allow the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed? And how do you allow all the blood to flow? Zok Tatera Divrei Rivois Bisharecha. Because there were fights in Klal Yisrael. There was no unity. And when there's no unity, Hashem suspends all of the rules. So the teretz of the Medrash, to how was there allowed to be so much breaking of the rules during the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the answer is mamish, because Divrei Rivois Bisharecha, because there was fighting. There was no unity. And because there was no fighting, that's why Klal Yisrael had all the terrible things that befell them during the Churban. So we know that the Beis Din HaGadol consists of 71 people. So they say over a story that during some time before the Holocaust, because the Bechorim Wasserman was involved in the story and the Meshech Chachma was involved in the story, and they both were talking probably the first half of the 20th century, they wanted to make an Asifa with a Vad, with a Mayetzes. And there was a discussion of how many Rabbanim should be on the Mayetzes. So some people said we should make a Mayetzes of 23 to be like a Sanhedrin Katana. Some people said, no, we should have 71 like to be like the Sanhedrin Gedolah. And someone even said, no, we should have a Mayetzes of the same amount of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And both Rabbi Meir Simcha and Rabbi Chanan were so upset about this. Like, what, we're going to create some Vad, some Mayetzes that's a slight similar to Sanhedrin Katana or Sanhedrin Gedolah or like the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah? A chutzpah, both Rabbi Meir Simcha and the Meshachach, I'm sorry, both Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and Rabbi Meir Simcha were so bothered by this notion that someone thinks that they're going to have, that they think for a second that they're going to have a group of Rabbanim in the 20th century, they're going to be similar to Sanhedrin. As a chutzpah, they were both very disturbed by such a notion. So then the Torah tells us the idea of leisasur, that if someone goes off, doesn't follow the rules of the Torah, he's a violation of leisasur. Okay? Then we have the next parasha of Melech, the idea of a Jewish king. Was the Torah say, you're going to move into Eretz Yisrael. You're going to say, I want a king. I want to have a king. So the Torah says, good. You'll have a king that Hashem will choose for you amongst one of your brothers. You're not allowed to have a Goyish king. So there's a whole Shiloh over here. Was it wrong or is it wrong to ask for a king? Is it right to ask for a king? We know in the Navi, by the times of Shmuel, they asked for a king and they got in trouble. So is it wrong or is it right? So the way many Mepharshim learn, it depends what's your motivation. Why do you want to have a king? If you want to have a king because you want to have pride, you want to have hajuracha, so that's not such a bad thing. But if you want to have a king, just why? Because, what's the lash of the pasuk? Kichol ha-goyim. I just want to have it because that's what the goyim have. It's an excuse for assimilation. It's an excuse for being like the goyim. Then Hashem says, that's not my agenda over here. I'm not giving you a melech so you could be like the goyim. I'm giving you a melech because you can have, you know, pride in your leader. You can have, you know, a chashivas. But I'm not going to give you just because you want to be like the goyim around you. Then the Torah reminds us that Rak lo yarbo le'susim, he's not allowed too many horses. We don't want him to bring the people back to Mitzrayim. And he's not allowed to have too many wives. He's not allowed to have too much money. All that is not allowed. Why? And then the Torah, it's not clear, right? The Torah just says, "V'lo yasur livavoy." We don't want it to sway his heart. And then the Torah says, "V'yok yishiftei al kisei mamlachtoi," when he sits on his throne. So the Sfasemis writes over here, we know when a king starts, in his first day in office, he's always excited. He wants to help the people. He wants to be there for the people. And as he goes on, it's really just more about his own covet, and it's really only about keeping the power. So the Sfasemis says that V'hayu kishifta kisei mamlachtoi means that the king should live his life every day like the first day he sat down on his throne. You know, all those campaign promises that he said, I'm here for the people, right? By the people, for the people. That attitude should stay with him every single day when he's a king, not just the first day when he takes over. And we know the king over here had the king had over here the idea of having a Sefer Torah, that he has to have Hoysa Imoy V'Karubo Kol Yimei, that Sefer Torah goes with him every day of his life. The Sefer Torah was wrapped around his neck. He used to carry it around with him. Why took the Torah? Leman Yilmad LeYiras Hashem Aleikov. He needs that Torah to teach him Yiras Shemayim. So the Mepharshim point out, you see from over here, that the key to Yiras Shemayim is learning Torah. The more Torah a person learns, the more knowledge he knows, the more Torah he studies, it brings him to Yiras Hashem. And that was the job of the king. The king needed Yiras Hashem. Why is it the next pasuk? Levilti roim levavoy meachav, lest he become haughty, lest he become a Baal Gaiva. And here the the Mefarshim point out, the Ramban writes, if I'm not mistaken, it's a Ramban, that this is the source of the Avera called Gaiva. What does it say? He can't be a Baal Gaiva. Zog, the Ramban is learned from this week's Parsha, even though in last week's Parsha there was a pasuk that also seemed to be teaching us Gaiva. But says the Ramban, in this week's Parsha we learned that you're not allowed to be a Baal Gaiva. If anyone, the king would become a Baal Gaiva, and the Torah says, don't, levilti rom levavoy me'achav, don't become a Baal Gaiva, and therefore writes the Ramban, this is the Makar for the idea of Gaiva, and thinking you're better than everyone else. But the Satmar, the Rebbe said a beautiful pshat. He says, what's there to be Gaiva from? He said, you know what people would be jealous of the king? So most of us would say, because he's powerful, he's wealthy, he's influential. Said the Ger Rebbe, no, because of his connection to Torah. That's why people are going to be jealous of him. They're going to be jealous of that he has this special closeness to the Torah, that he studies the Torah, he lives by the Torah, he's more connected to the Torah. That's what leads you to be jealous of. Said the Ger Rebbe, what else are you going to be jealous of? A guy who has a lot of money, why should you be jealous of him? There's nothing to be jealous about. Why do you want to be like him? Zok the Ger Rebbe, but if he has Torah, that's taka something that we'd be jealous of, and that's something we would taka want for ourselves. We know that the Gemara tells us that the king had two Sifrei Torah. Why did he have two Sifrei Torah? So Chazal say, one when he went in and one when he went out. So the vision that the Rebbe says over here, we learn an important yesod. A person has to live a life of Torah when he goes and when he comes. Many people have two sets of rules. When they're traveling, when they're on vacation, it's, do what you want on vacation. And then when you're back home, in the shchuna, in your community, you're different. Says the vision of the Rebbe, no, you gotta be the same way where you're in and when you're out. When you're inside and people are not watching you, when you're outside and people are watching you, you have to be the same person in and out, teiche kibari, wherever you go, and wherever you find yourself. Then the Torah tells us about the matnas kahuna, the various gifts that the kohen gets. So the Torah tells us the kohen gets the zeraya, the lechayim, and the keva, different parts of the animal. So they say over an amazing story about the Malbum. The Malbum, Emes had a very, very difficult life. The Malbum got married when he was 14 years old. 4 years later, he divorced his wife, which was obviously not typical for the 19th century. And he had two kids, and he really didn't have such a connection to his kids. It's a taka sad story. And he was a rabbi in different communities in Europe. Eventually, he was offered, he was a rabbi in a bunch of different communities, but he finds himself in the town of Buchach, Romania, in the mid-1800s. So this community was already struggling with reform. So the Malbum was very, very strong against reform. So in his opening drusha to his kehillah, he tells his kehillah like this. He says, I ask of you, this is his opening drusha and his new job. He says, I ask of you, please give me your zeroya lecha'ayim and your keva. So what did he mean by that? So he said, the zeroya means, I ask of you, please put on tefillin every day. He said, the keva means, I don't want you to eat macholas asuris. And the lecha'ayim means, I don't want you to shave your beard. This was the Malbum's drusha to his kehillah when he took over in Bachach in 1859. Just to give you an example of what he was dealing with. And he was a rav in many communities in Europe. He was actually offered the rabbinic position in New York City. He was offered to become the rav of New York City, and he turned it down. And he ultimately died in 1879 while traveling to take a different position in Europe. But this is what he told his kehillah. I'm asking you, please give me your zeraya l'chaim and your keva, which means put on tefillin every day. Don't eat machalas asuris, and don't shave off your beard. And what world was like in the 19th century in Europe is not always the way they like to portray it, but that was the way it really was. Then the Torah tells us, the Torah tells us further on that we have to not go into any of this, all these funny things that people do to try to know what's going on in the world. They want to try to, read your palm and read you this and read you that. So the Torah tells, don't do any of this. What? But tamim tia im Hashem alekech. Person has to be tamim tia im Hashem alekech. So Rashi says, what does that mean? Hesalach imay b'tmimis. You should just go with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'titzap b'loy, v'loy tachkar achar asidus. Don't worry about the future. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got you covered. He's got it all covered. Don't worry. Elokom mashiyovi alech hakibu b'tmimis. Everything is just accept the way it is. So the Chafetz Chaim says, people make a mistake. They say Tamim Tia. They think Tamim Tia means with everyone. So you go into business with someone, you don't bother looking to not whether or not the guy is a thief. and you don't bother looking to whether or not it's a good idea. So the Chofetz Chaim said that's wrong. It's tam tia im Hashem alekech. With Hashem you could do it, but not with a human. With a human you got to research him, you got to check into him. If he's if he has a bad pass, he has a checkered pass, don't do business with him. Don't say no, tam tia, no. Dr. Chofetz Chaim, that's a colossal mistake to think tam tia im HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's tam tia only. It's only with Hashem. Then the Torah tells us that if you'll have a Navi mikir b'cha me'achecha kamoini, if you'll have a good Navi, so then Elov tishmo'un, to him you should listen. A good Navi, you should listen to him. K'chol asher shalta me'ashem l'kech, that's what you should listen to. So they say over a story, it's a fascinating story, they say a ma'isa with the Brisker Rav. They say over that the Brisker Rav, they told the Brisker Rav a story about his father, Reb Chaim. They say that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said about Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin. Shmuel Leib Diskin, he said, was such a goyin that whatever he says is Elof Tishmon. Whatever he says, you should listen to. So that's what Reb Chaim said about Reb Shmuel Leib Diskin. So the Brisker Rav said it can't be. He said because that pasuk is talking about a Navi. On a Navi, it says, call Elof Tishmon. Whatever he says, you should listen. But about a regular Choshev Rav, he says, I can't imagine that you would say such a thing. So the Satmar Rebbe heard the story. And the Satmar Rebbe said, Ayin Reb Kiveger in Shulchan Aruch. So what do you want with Reb Kiveger in Shulchan Aruch? So if you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, Reb Kiveger writes, in I think Kuf Nun Vav, the Simon that talks about Kedusha, basically, and talks about Kedusha. So there, Reb Kiveger says that some people have a practice not to say the words Naktishachav Naritzach. But he quotes from the Arizal, that the Arizal said we all could say Naktishach, and Reb Kiveger ends off the Elof Tishmon, and to him the Arizal we should listen. So the Satmar Rebbe said, you see, Reb Kiveger had no problem saying the words of Elecha Tishmon. So it could be Reb Chaim said it also. To me, that's maybe a bigger story about the Bikias of the Satmar Rebbe than anything. But it's again an interesting story nonetheless. Then we have over here, it's getting late again. Interesting medrash. The medrash, we'll go backwards a little bit. The Torah told us that we're not allowed, a king is not allowed to have too many wives. It says, La Yarbe Loy Noshim. Not allowed to have a lot of wives. So the medrash says that the word Yarbe is the letter Yud went to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why was Shlomo HaMelech having so many wives? So the stipler has a kasha, why was the Yud from the word Yarbe complaining? So it's the letter Yud. So the stipler said a very interesting pshat. He said, because the idea is that Yud stands for the future. The word was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Enachnami, Shlomo HaMelech is a good guy, he's a Talmud Chacham, he can have many wives, it won't affect him. But I'm worried about the future. I know there'll come a time where there'll be Jewish kings that are not Shlomo HaMelech's caliber. And I'm worried that if we're going to start this new status, that all the kings are going to break the laws, what's going to be with the future? There was up the stipler. That's why the Yud, which represents the future, he was worried about the future, which I think is such an important idea today. Very often you have people that maybe they are above the law, not above the law, maybe they could handle it, but what's going to be with the future generation? When we set a system, this is always the issue with fancy chasanas. You have those people that Taka Baruch Hashem can afford fancy chasanas, but when you start making the norm that level, what's going to be with the future generations? They won't be able to handle that level. So here, this, the way the stipler is saying, I think it's such an important lesson that we always have to think about what's the future going to be. Are they going to be able to handle it? And if they're not going to be able to handle it, we have to think about whether or not it makes sense for us to set such a high standard. Okay. Then we have over here, and the Torah talks about the idea of Ori Miklot. So it says in the Pasuk, in Perek Yutes Pasuk Hey, it says that V'noshel ha-barzel m'nei tzu matzas reva m'eis hu yanus al-achas ha-ori m'eila v'chai. He goes to one of the cities and he lives. So what does it mean, he lives? So the Gemara says that Talmud shegoyle, if a Talmud has to go to Yemiklot, so his Rebbe has to go with him. Why does the Rebbe have to go with him? Because it says in the Pasuk v'chai, he has to live, and a Talmud can't live without his Rebbe. So there's a lot to talk about over here. What would happen today with Zoom? Maybe today with Zoom, the Rebbe could stay where he is, and the Talmud would go to Yer Miklat, and he'll learn via Zoom. But everyone knows Zoom is not the same. But the Mefarshim pointed out, Rashi White talks a lot about this idea. You see over here the importance of learning from a specific Rebbe. There were a lot of Choshev people he could have learned by in Yer Miklat. But you see over here, there's a certain significance about a certain Rebbe. Not every Talmud and Rebbe is always a Shidduch. Sometimes it just doesn't work. So if a guy has a Talmud, has a Rebbe that he's taka being matzliach with, so for him to have to break up that relationship, it would be felt in his life. It wouldn't be v'chaye. It wouldn't be considered living. And therefore, the Torah says that the Rebbe has to go with him. The Rebbe has to go with him as well. Then we have over here, the Torah talks about kisei tzala milchama al yivecha. A person goes to war. So the Torah says, don't be afraid because Hashem is with you. Don't worry. But then the Torah tells us, v'dibru ha-shoytum el-om le'mar. But there is a group of people that are nervous. Who is the group of people that are nervous? Mi-o-yish ha-shem bon ha-bayis chodesh v'lo-yich-an-ocho. Guy built a new house, spent millions and millions of dollars to build a new house, and he didn't yet have a chance to live in it. So that guy, yelech v'yosh le-beis, he should go back home. He's going to be so stressed, he's going to be so nervous, he should go back home. Why? Because, as the pasuk, Penyomus b'mochamas, he may be die v'ish achayach nechenu, and someone else is going to take his house. So Mepharshim point out over here, it's a chesaron in his character flaw. First of all, that's the thing he's going to think about before he dies. The guy's about to go to war, he's thinking his life is flashing in front of his eyes, and what's he worried about? Oh, I'm not going to live in the house that I spent $3 million building. No, he's going to be thinking about, did I do enough mitzvahs? I'm leaving my family. What's going to be with my chelik and habu? That's what he should be thinking. He shouldn't be thinking about that. And others say it a little differently. Others say that, why should that bother you? Good, so let someone else take the house. Or the next person, a guy was not the kemba lechilla, someone else should take my kerim, or a guy got married and someone else should take my wife. Yeah, if you're not around, let someone else enjoy it. So many of the Mepharshim learn that this is perhaps a natural thought process for a human being, but it's wrong. We should try to train our minds not to think that way. But the Torah doesn't hold it against him. The Torah is very practical. The Torah says, yeah, that's what people are thinking. And therefore what, says the Torah? He can't go to war. Why? Because, says the pasuk, v'lo yimases levav echov kil vavoy. We don't want him to affect others like him. If he's going to be all nervous and scared and stressed, it's going to affect the others. So this is another mekar for the chashivas of a group. A person can affect the group in a positive way. A person can affect the group in a negative way. So here, if you're giving off the negative feelings, so that's going to affect the group. Sometimes in life, you can give off positive feelings, give up an excitement, right? Excitement is catchy. Happiness is catchy. A lot of things that we do is catchy. So here, the Torah is reminding us that if we do something negative, it's going to be catchy. It's a bad idea. But the flip side is if a person does something positive, then it could also be catchy. We can get people excited about Yiddishkeit. A lot of times, people don't realize if they stop and they learn more, and people walk into shul, they see them learning, they'll be like, wow, he could do it, I could do it. It's a catchy thing. So we spoke about this in other weeks also. A lot of things that we do are catchy. So here the Torah says, we don't want you to corrupt someone else. So here it's saying, when you have negative things, we don't want your negative feelings affecting others. But the hepach is also true. If a person has positive ideas, positive things, it could also affect others in a very, very positive and a very helpful way. So so what happens? So the Torah tells us that he shouldn't go to war. So we had a special kohen whose job was the kohen ha-mashuach, and Chazal tells us the job of the kohen ha-mashuach was not given by Yerusha. The job of the kohen ha-mashuach was elected based, meaning it wasn't nitna by Yerusha. Normally kohanim, kohanim gedolim, everything is a very Yerusha based position. This was not a Yerusha based position, and the Moshe Sternbach explains the reason why it's not a Yerusha based practice is because the Kohen HaMashuach had to talk to the people. He had to know the feelings of the people. He had to know how the people feel and their worries and their concerns and their pep talks. He got to know the people. If you're a Kohen who's not tailor-made for this job, it's not cut out for you. Right? Everyone has to know their koiches, their strengths and their abilities. Not everyone is cut out for the same job. So if the job is something like, you know, working the base of Mikdash, so the Torah says every kohen does it. But here, you need to be able to inspire a group. You need to be able to relate to the group. I think this is an important lesson for chinuch, right? This parasha is always read as we go back to school. So not everyone's cut out to be a teacher. Not everyone's cut out to even be a rebbe. You have to be able to, if you know how to talk to students, you know how to relate to students, you know how to give over information to the students, then avada. But just because your father was a rebbe or your grandfather was a rebbe doesn't mean you're a rebbe. Just like the Kohen HaMashuach was not given Yerusha, it's not always cut out for everyone. Sometimes people have to know their strengths and their weaknesses, and it's not in the Yerusha. Not everything is given by Yerusha. We'll just end off. We'll end off over here with the Egel Arufa. The end of the parsha, the Torah talks about the Egel Arufa. So the Zekeinim say, Yadanu lo shufcha. We had nothing to do with this. So the Gemara, Rashi quotes the Gemara, what do you mean? And we thought the Zekeinim were the ones who murdered him. Those are the first people we go to, the big rabbis with long beards. They're the murderers. So Rashi says, no, this Kainim said that we were Malavim. We escorted him out of the city like we're supposed to, and therefore we're not held accountable. So the question is, what does the escorting out of the city do for anyone? Right? If the guy was murdered by a bunch of bandits on the road, escorting him or not escorting him is not going to make a difference. So the Yisoy that many Mepharshim say is that when a person gets escorted out of the town, it gives him the reminder that someone cares about him. So you're right. So when you're escorted out of the town and now you're between the two cities and you're all alone with a robber, but you have that sense of someone cares about me. When a person has a sense that someone cares about me, he has so much more push to do things. So many stories of people that really were on the brink of desperation, and then someone came into their life and said, "Oh, I care about you." It saved them from death. I know of numerous stories of people that were ready to take their lives because they thought no one cares about them. And one person all of a sudden showed up and said, "I care, I'm here for you," and they decided to change their whole attitude. So if this fellow would have been, if this fellow was taka escorted, so then he was given the confidence, he was given the self-worth that someone cares about him, he could then fight that bandit, he can then have that strength to be able to defend himself. But if he was not nislave, if no one cared about him, so he was taka, he was depressed, he felt so bad about himself, he didn't feel good about himself, and therefore perhaps that's why things happened to him. I think it's such an important lesson of we don't realize how just showing a small interest in someone, showing that we care, showing that we're here for them, we can't change the world, but we can change them for that day. We don't know how many people that are on the brink of depression because they feel like they're all alone and no one cares about them, and we just smile and say, "No, I want to know how you're doing." We make a difference. It can really change someone's life. It could change really from giving that koiches, that energy that he needs, that inspiration that he needs to continue his day. Okay. We didn't get to a lot, but I think we got to more than we did last time. We learned Parashas Shoftim. So wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos and Mr. Shem Sunday morning. Hopefully we should be back in person for our Gemara Shiur.